We are now into our fourth week of the history of the biblical church. Actually, it's the fifth week, but never mind that. We missed a week because Matthew decided he wanted to show his ugly head and change things. So we've talked about Thessalonica, we've talked about Galatia, we've talked about, what was the other one we did? I've totally blanked. You'd think I would remember it. We didn't do Philippi. Oh well. Go back and listen to the recording. But today, we're doing Corinth. Because Corinth is a biggin. We've got two letters that go to Corinth. And Paul wrote a lot to Corinth. Actually, if you look at the way that the epistles are set up, they're not arranged chronologically. They're not arranged thematically. They're not arranged. If you look at it, they're arranged in terms of size. Okay? Romans, which is the first of the Pauline epistles, is the biggest. Okay? The next longest Pauline epistle is 1 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians comes next just because it's 1 Corinthians' little brother. And then everything else that follows just gets smaller and smaller until you get to the last Pauline epistles, which is Philemon, and it's just one little chapter. They don't even give it chapters. It's just like Philemon 4. No chapter, just verse 4. There it is. So the two Corinthian epistles are huge. They're tremendously important. So let's look at Corinth. Let's look at this map, and we can see that we have Galatia. We talked about the epistle to the Galatians and the things that happened. There we've got Ephesus in Asia. We spend like 3 years in Ephesus. We've got Philippia and Thessalonica up in Macedonia. We've got Achaia, the region of like the main Grecian peninsula. Down in Achaia, we have Athens. We also have Corinth. And let's zoom in on Corinth to make it a little clearer because that doesn't really... Oh, that's much better. Because that we see just exactly where, well, we can see more clearly where Athens is, and we can see the most unpronounceable word in the English language, isthmus. Exactly. I-S-T-H-M-U-S. Isthmus. This little land bridge that connects this larger section, which is called the Peloponnese. They've got Greece written across the middle of it, but it's actually called the Peloponnese. It's where Sparta is, if you were really into the 300 and this is Sparta and all this chest thumping. That's where Sparta is. And you've got Athens over there. And so if we zoom in even further, oh, perfect. This is that really incredibly vital canal that connects the Corinthian Gulf with the Saronic Gulf, which means that these ships could go from one sea to the next. This was like the Panama Canal of the ancient world. This was so incredibly vital. This thing there called the Diolkos was a road that if you had a ship that was too big, they would literally put it up on logs and they would roll it, like moving one log in front of the other, and they would literally just push it across from one of the... The Isthmian Wall was something that would be this giant barrier. The Acrocorinth was sort of like the Acropolis. It was this huge mountain, and on top of it, they had temples. It was very important. And then you see that in the northwestern side of this huge sort of Corinthian metropolis, you've got the city of Lycaon, and in the southern side, you have Kenchrea. If you read Acts 18 closely, Paul at one point, as he gets ready to leave, he goes to Kenchrea and he shaves his head as a sacrifice. That was a Jewish ritual. Okay, so this is where this kind of thing happened. Isthmia was a place where they regularly, every couple years, had the Isthmian Games. Everyone knows about the Olympics, right? Everyone knows that the Olympian Games were this huge, we still do the Olympian Games. There was like a 1,000-year break in them or something like that, but they still do them. Well, the Isthmian Games were like the next biggest thing, and it was incredibly important. They all met, and they all stayed in these big tents, which meant that St. Paul, the tent maker, could have made a fortune during the time when they were doing the Isthmian Games. Okay, so this was the perfect place for him to be. All right, so St. Paul's relationship with Corinth, next slide, is known as the Corinthian correspondence because it's not, he didn't just send two letters. He had multiple interactions with them, and he sent probably four letters. Only two of them are part of the Bible. The other two are lost, which is a real shame because we would have loved to have known what the rest of them said. Okay? Now, for the bulk of what we know of, or what the bulk of what most of us know about Paul's relationship with Corinth comes from Acts chapter 18, right? When we go to Acts 18, we see that Paul goes to Corinth. He meets Aquila and Priscilla there. He has some favor there. They try and arrest him. They bring him before this person. The guy is like, I don't care about this. This is like Jewish rules. Whatever, go away. You bother me, man. Leave me alone. Okay? But that's really, really significant to historians because Acts 18:12 says, when Gallio was proconsul in Achaia, okay, he would have been, this is incredibly important. It is the single most precisely datable line in Acts of the Apostles, okay? When we look at the entire book of Acts of the Apostles, that one line is the most specifically historical passage in the entire book. Gallio was in Corinth from 51 to 52 AD. So that is when Acts chapter 18 took place. Everything else kind of slides back and forth, and it's kind of like pin the tail on the donkey. You slide the whole thing back and forth, and it stops within that two-year period. That's where it lands. Okay? That is incredibly important. Okay? So, after Paul left Corinth, we're just going to summarize what we know from Acts, and then we're going to get into a lot bigger detail. You'd be surprised how much more about Corinth and the Corinthian correspondence is in there. We just haven't really looked at it this way. After he left Corinth, he went to Ephesus with Aquila and Priscilla, and he moved on to the Holy Land. That's the second missionary journey ends. So he leaves. Acts tells us that he left with Aquila and Priscilla, and he went to Ephesus. And after he stayed in Ephesus, Aquila and Priscilla stay in Ephesus, and he goes back to the Holy Land. It's the end of the second missionary journey. Bless you. While Paul was away, Apollos, who was an Egyptian, he arrived in Ephesus. Aquila and Priscilla received him warmly. They talked to him about the baptism of the Holy Spirit, and then he leaves and he goes to Corinth. Okay? Now, on the third missionary journey, we've talked about this before, Paul spent 3 years in Ephesus before making this trip through Macedonia and Achaia. Remember, Corinth is in Achaia. And then he finally returned back to the Holy Land. Now, I say here, St. Luke gives us really few details about this Paul's trip outside of Achaia. If you remember, this is in chapter 20, and there's like two verses, and the majority of these passages are the people who were with him and where they were from. Like Segundus and Sopater and all these different people who we like never hear anything else about. But this is this really lengthy trip, and Luke leaves out so much detail. It's really strange. We'd kill to know the things that happened while he went, you know, back through Philippi, back through Thessalonica, maybe through Athens again, visited Corinth again. We'd love to know this. And St. Luke says, essentially, he made a journey through Achaia and Macedonia and returned back to Ephesus. Really? You think you might want to fill in a couple extra details there, buddy? Okay. So, let's talk about what we know. Okay, first off, what we know beyond what Acts tells us. 1 Corinthians was not St. Paul's actual first correspondence with the people of Corinth. Okay, after he left Corinth, The first thing that he did to communicate them was not write 1 Corinthians. Okay? Pardon me. There you go. Okay, so 1 Corinthians 5:9, St. Paul mentions his previous letter. He says, in my previous letter, I wrote you. Well, holy cow! He says, in my previous letter, I wrote you and said, bah. He said he wrote you a previous letter. Wow. We have no idea what this is. It's not existent anymore. We've lost it. It's one of like the biggest tragedies of biblical literature. We don't know what this letter said, it's gone. It's a tragedy. We also, in 1 Corinthians 1:11, St. Paul says that he got word from Chloe's people. Okay, so Chloe's people come, and we don't know who Chloe was. We don't know how many of her people she sent, but Chloe was probably a successful woman in Corinth. She was probably one of the leading people there. She may have been one of the people who, in common circumstances, was a wealthy man died, and a woman became, his wife became the sort of heir of his business, and that was pretty much the only way that a woman became an independent sort of citizen at the time, a woman of means, was that her husband died and left her the business. So Chloe is probably somebody to whom that happened, and she was probably a convert to Christianity and somebody who ministered to Paul and ministered with Paul, and something happened and she said, hey, you guys, I want you to go and talk to Paul and ask him this. Okay? Along the same lines, 1 Corinthians 16:17 says, Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus also visited him, and they, it says, fulfilled what was lacking. Right? Because Paul had received at least one more letter from Corinth. Okay? So they sent a letter, and we know from our previous Bible study when we talked about the gifts of the Spirit, that there are six times in 1 Corinthians where St. Paul says, now concerning this, it's most likely that in the letter that they sent to Paul from Corinth, they said, Paul, we have questions about this. Paul, we have questions about this. Paul, we have questions about this. And probably Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus were like, hey, by the way, this is also going on. And he was like, oh, by the way, they fulfilled what was lacking. I don't know if you've ever sent an email or a message or a letter to somebody, and you're like, hey, this is what's going on. And somebody else sent a message, and they kind of included some other details that maybe you didn't want included. That was kind of what Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus did from what we gather. Okay. Now, after all those things, after all four of those situations come together, we get the Chloe's people who come together, Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus come together, they get the letter from Corinth, and he's already written the one letter to them. All those factors come together, and Paul writes 1 Corinthians. Okay? Now, the neat thing about this is that there's no mystery from whence it was written. St. Paul says, I will tarry in Ephesus until Pentecost. Boom. He wrote it from Ephesus. Most likely it was in 56 AD during his 3-year stay in Ephesus. It's fantastic. It's like one of the few times that it just comes right out and says, it's written in Ephesus. Like no one else is that simple. You have to like do all sorts of like historical algebra to figure out where everything else is written from. And this is just like, hey, I'm going to stay here in Ephesus until this other time. And it's fantastic. Now, interestingly enough, and this is my own little fun theory, which you can take or leave. So St. Paul lists Sosthenes as the co-author of 1 Corinthians in the opening verse. Now, St. Luke says that St. Paul was the ruler, I left off an R, a ruler of the synagogue to whom the Jews beat after Gallio released Paul. If you look in Acts 18:17, they pulled Paul, they tried to get him like beaten by Gallio, and Gallio said, "This is a Jewish matter. This is not anything that the Romans need to deal with. You guys handle this yourself." And out of anger, they grabbed Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue, and they beat him. Because that makes sense. So it appears that Luke didn't include the fact that when Paul, Aquila, and Priscilla left, Sosthenes went with them. It appears that Sosthenes converted, he became a Christian, and being a fairly prominent figure, Paul includes him as a co-author of 1 Corinthians. That's really cool. That the leader of the synagogue became a Christian and was listed as a co-author because he was a prominent enough figure that his name on this epistle carried weight with it. Now, I have a theory. This is just my theory. Absolutely no, like, I've never looked open at a book and said, you know, oh yeah, this scholar is like, this is clearly what happened. I think that St. Luke and Sosthenes didn't get along. And so the only detail that Luke includes about him is that the Jews beat him up. Just my thing, okay? The only thing he says, oh yeah, so the Jews beat the tar out of him. You jerk, this is what's going down in history about you. Anyway, that's just me. Okay, probably not the case, but I like the idea. All right, so, oh gosh, question. No. Well, yes, there were tons of calendars. There was a Roman calendar, there was a Syrian calendar, there was an Egyptian calendar, there were all sorts of different calendars. Okay, that's why when you go to the second chapter of Luke, when they start and they say, in the first year of this and the second year of that, when so-and-so was the governor of this and the so-and-so was the this of that, that's how they dated things, okay? Because what you would do if you were trying to locate something in history was you'd say, okay, well, I know that this guy was so-and-so at this time, and this guy was so-and-so, and you kind of like, oh, okay, so we know this guy was here from like 32 to 34, and this guy was from this to this, and you kind of narrow it down to, you go and it's, oh, okay, so it's probably like this time. They dated things, but a calendar over here was different than the calendar way over here. I mean, there was like the Roman calendar, but if you're way out in the hinterlands, they might be using a different calendar. Okay? It only works if you're in Judea. I mean, yeah, the Jewish calendar works, but the Greeks in Corinth wouldn't pay attention to the Jewish calendar. Yeah, but that would only work for the Jews, which were becoming an increasingly small portion of Christianity. Okay, so once Paul sent out 1 Corinthians, he got word that things had gotten bad in Corinth. Okay, you think that 1 Corinthians is this incredibly powerful work, the people would have been like, oh, we've gotten this incredible like light shining down from heaven. Picture somebody reading it in the church and like, you know, everybody being like, oh, no, not what happened, okay? But this prompted an immediate and unsuccessful return trip to Corinth by Paul, okay? He visited Corinth and the trip was bad. We know this because Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians, he says, chapter 2, verse 1, I made up my mind not to make another painful visit to you. Okay? Now, his first visit was what we see in Acts 18. That wasn't painful, it was incredibly successful. just doing the math, the simple deduction says this is when he made the second visit. And it was a flop. Okay, so why? How did it go so badly? All right, this painful visit, we can deduce that although St. Paul threatened to come with a rod, when he arrived, he was actually far more meek and lowly. Okay, he said he was going to come and be all like, oh, when I get there, I'm going to show you people what for. But when he showed up, he was really kind of humble and lowly. And we can see that in 1 Corinthians 4:21, and ultimately how lowly and meek he was in 2 Corinthians 10:1 and 10. And then his critics, they mocked him for being really bold in his letters and being really kind of mild in person. Right? They were like, you know, he's all talk. He writes these letters where he's all bold and all powerful and, oh, and when I get there, I'm going to... And then he gets there and he's all humble and gentle and mild. And where's all that authority he's going to come with? Where's that rod? Okay, that's the source of the pain in his painful visit. Okay, so having left Corinth after the painful visit, he writes another letter, okay? And he tells us, and I wrote as I did, so that when I came, I might not suffer pain from those who should have made me rejoice. For I felt sure of all of you that my joy would be the joy of you all. For I wrote you out of much affliction and anguish of heart and with many tears, not to cause you pain, but to let you know of the abundant love that I have for you. Okay, this is from 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. This letter, which we do not have, knife in the chest, is referred to as the letter with many tears. And it was probably carried by Titus and probably well received. Okay, so Paul comes back after the painful visit and writes what's referred to as the letter with many tears. Titus carries it to Corinth, and it's probably very well received. Because Paul wrote, but God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus, and not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted by you, as he told us of your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced still more. This is 2 Corinthians 7, 6 and 7. So it appears that Paul gave Titus this letter, said, take this to my brethren in Corinth, and that when he took it to them, they received it, they repented. They're like, wow, this is right, this is the word of God, we were wrong. And when Titus came back, he was like, wow, they've changed, okay? So Titus brought the good news of the Corinthians' repentance to Paul as the apostle was moving about, most likely in Philippi. If we look at Acts chapter 20, verse 1, this is when there's like the three or four verses where everybody does that long trip in the really short verses, okay? And immediately upon receiving the good news, St. Paul wrote another letter to the Corinthians. That's what we call 2 Corinthians, the second epistle to the church at Corinth, or the second epistle to the Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, okay? So when he gets the good news of their repentance, he writes 2 Corinthians. So 2 Corinthians is really Paul's fourth letter to them. It's just the second one that we have. We don't have the previous letter. We don't have the letter with many tears. Okay. Having sent 2 Corinthians, Paul followed up with a third and final visit. In this last letter, he speaks of the visit and insists that he'll deal with those who are causing trouble. Okay, we can see that in 2 Corinthians 12, 14, and 13, 1 and 2. He says, this will be my final visit, or my third visit, And when I come to you this third time, I will deal with those who have caused so much trouble. Okay? So, let's summarize the Corinthian correspondence. Okay? So, the first thing that we have is St. Paul's, when he arrives in Corinth the first time, we can see this whole thing laid out pretty clearly in Acts chapter 18. Okay? He arrives in Corinth, possibly by himself, possibly with St. Luke, probably with St. Luke. St. Luke was probably with him in Athens, which was his last stop before. He probably arrived with him there. We see that Timothy and Silas arrived a little later. Okay? So they get there. He has a really good time, spends about 18 months in Corinth. God opens all sorts of doors. He meets Aquila and Priscilla. They have a really good ministry there. The Jews try and bring him up on trial before Gallio, the proconsul. Doesn't work. Gallio doesn't want to hear anything about it. He just kind of scoffs at him, kicks him out. And then they go in to beat up Sosthenes. At that point, well, not at that point, after his time in Corinth is done, Aquila and Priscilla and probably Sosthenes leave, go to Ephesus, spend a little bit of time at Ephesus before Paul ultimately returns to the Holy Land. Okay? So while in Ephesus, probably on the third missionary journey, after he's come back, Paul receives word from various Corinthians groups, and writes one previous letter. Okay, so this is, he writes the previous letter. We don't have it. Chloe's people come and visit him. He gets the letter from Corinth, where they give him all the questions, you know, hey, what about all the speaking in tongues thing? What about whether people should get married or not? What about food offered to idols? They give him the whatabouts, the six whatabouts, and he gives them the now concernings, ultimately later when we get 1 Corinthians. And then Stephanus, Fortunatus, and Achaicus' people come to him, okay, and they fill in the blanks. So that's the different people who come. He writes the one previous letter, and then ultimately, St. Paul writes 1 Corinthians from Ephesus. Okay? Now, next we get Apollos, and others arrive in Corinth, and the situation becomes worse. Now, this isn't to say that Apollos made it worse, or, you know, Peter arrived in Corinth at some point in time there too. It's not necessarily that they made it worse. You know, there were people who arrived in Galatia, and they made it worse. Maybe it's the same people. Maybe it's different people. At one point, they're referred to as super apostles. We don't know who they are. But they messed things up. And Paul ultimately has to deal with these things. So Paul makes his painful visit, his second visit to the Corinthians. Okay? That visit goes horribly poorly. So when he returns to Ephesus, Paul writes his painful letter. I'm sorry, the letter with many tears. Okay, he writes the letter with many tears to Corinth. Again, we don't have that letter. Very sad. We'd love to know what was in St. Paul's previous letter. We'd love to know what was in the letter with many tears. These letters are simply non-existent. We don't. They're lost. All right. So Titus carries the letter with many tears to Corinth. St. Paul receives word from the Corinthians, from the hand of Titus, probably in Macedonia, possibly in Philippi, that they've repented. They've received the letter with many tears. They're sorry. They love Paul. Our bad. Please come visit us one more time. So Paul does. He visits Corinth one final time before returning to the Holy Land to stand trial. He goes back to well, he kind of skirts Ephesus. He goes to the city just north of it and to the city just south of it because he doesn't want to get caught in Ephesus by the elders, so he avoids it and then he goes back to the Holy Land to stand trial before ultimately being sent to Rome. Okay, but he makes one last visit. He doesn't really write about that last visit, so we don't know what happened, but we assume it went well. He's made peace with them. There's a positive relationship. Hopefully it went very well. So, there we go. Okay, that is the history of the Corinthian correspondence. And while about that much of it is in Acts of the Apostles, there's a whole lot more in the Bible. You just have to know how to sort of read between the lines and look at it really carefully. Because it's all there, and the history of the biblical church is there. You just have to know how to peek and really know how to look at it. And there's a lot smarter, a lot more intelligent people who have done a whole lot more research about this than I have. And I'm not even standing on the backs of giants. I'm just reading their books. Okay? So don't think that I'm coming up with this all on my own. But next week, we're going to be talking about the prison epistles and the things that Paul wrote when he was in prison and what that probably meant and where it was. And then we're going to wrap this up, and that will be the end of our history of the biblical church. Okay? Anybody have any questions before we're done?